we're kind of already living in the phygital, but people don't really think of it as phygital. And that's where I have a problem with this digital physical like divide. You're already super digital. I don't see a difference between someone's house online being like a beautifully designed and actually being in the space.
Welcome to Barriers to Entry, the podcast where every episode we get into it with the leaders, designers, early adopters, and influencers who are driving innovation in the architecture and design industry. It's metaverse, AI, it's blockchain, it's all happening every week right here. I am Andrew Lane. I am with Digby. I'm joined by my illustrious Digby co-founder, Tessa Bain, and of course, our best friend, from Sandow Design Group, Bobby Bonet. Great to see everybody. How are y'all doing today?
That's such a dig that you would say that.
What? Illustrious is everyone's favorite adjective these days, I think.
Very original.
I'm smitten by being called your best friend. I'm wondering if you subscribe to our show saying we come at you every week. This show is released every other week, Andrew.
I'm talking about the show that I'm always recording in my head that no one actually gets to listen to. But yeah, you're right.
There you go. Fair enough.
But I think the other thing that's really cool is that we're a much more mature show, aging like a fine wine, as people have been known to say. And it's really exciting because we're going to do a couple of interesting things today. First of all, trying out a bit of a new vibe for the show heading into year two. And to do that, we thought, what better way than to bring back someone who knows the show quite well and has been there since the very beginning.
Our first guest, right?
Yeah, our first guest ever. So it's super exciting to have you here today, Jamie Derringer. Welcome to the chat, Jamie.
Thank you so much. I am very happy to be part of this experimental new format because I feel like it's on brand for me. So that works out really well.
We put out a wide search and it came back to the LinkedIn follow of the month, Jamie Derringer. And here we are.
Yes, thank you for having me back.
Jamie, since we last spoke, a lot has transpired. You know, back when we launched the show, we spent a lot of time talking about the metaverse. Then people stopped saying the word metaverse. Then we started to shift and talk more about artificial intelligence, which I think we're going to get into quite a bit today. Tess, Andrew, and I want to get your kind of feedback and perspective on what's changed in the world of innovation and design over the last 13 months.
I guess I'm curious too, just Jamie, when we started, you know, on a personal note, not just even kind of the innovation and what's shifted in the industry in general, but just you as Jamie Derringer, you know, 13 months ago, you were looking for maybe what were your next steps and you were kind of exploring everything and you didn't want to put a label on it or define yourself too much. You know, what's the difference between the Jamie then and the Jamie today?
Oh, wow. That's a really big question. A lot has transpired since the last time we talked. So when I was recording the podcast with you, I had started with Tonic, which I loved helping them grow and launch Tonic.xyz. It's an NFT art platform and gallery that offers fine art prints as well as NFTs. And that was a wonderful adventure. And then I took some time off to I called myself CEO of my couch, which is pretty much what I did for a while.
And that sounds like a lovely position, by the way.
No kidding.
It was, but it's very hard to do that, like to force yourself to rest and relax and not be productive. For me, it was a big challenge, really. I had to work at not working. It's really crazy. But ultimately, you know, I waited for the dust to settle, for my mind to settle, and really started to look at what am I most passionate about? What am I most excited about? And still came back to art, design, technology, all the things that we've been talking about, you know, and I've been talking about my entire career pretty much. It's been tumultuous for me in my brain, but it's also been really exciting. I think the technology that it's, you know, we've been talking about in the past year has just been changing so rapidly. And to watch that, it's partially exciting, part intimidating and scary, but it's a really exciting time, I think, still. I'm going to say, I'm sure I said that back in our first episode, but I'm still very excited and optimistic about it.
We'll check the tape, but we're definitely optimistic as well. I think that it's been really interesting just to see, you know, the way that even how you speak about the tech, and Bobby kind of referenced this up front, has started to shift, and you know, people have been trying to grab it at different parts of it. But I mean, what are some of the nuances that you've been observing through those shifts? What are some of the things that you found maybe most interesting from a from here to there standpoint in terms of, you know, the way, particularly that the industry is embracing all of these new opportunities?
Yeah, I think there's been so much change in the past year. There was such buzz about Web3 and NFTs, and there was such a hype cycle around that, which very quickly died down as people started talking about the metaverse. Mm-hmm. And the metaverse blew up, as you know, which is mostly what we talked about, previously. And then, you know, the media soured on that and said, oh, it's not going to happen because Mark Zuckerberg ran out of money or something ridiculous like that. As we all know, all of these immersive things are still being built, AR, VR, you know, metaverse type experiences. It's just going to take time. So I think now everybody kind of shifted to AI, which is the next new exciting thing that people can hype up and talk about. A lot of money is being poured into it. But I think all of these three technologies that we've been talking about are all still in the background. People are building. People are creating new companies. They're creating new ways of using these technologies. We can get into lots of details on any one of those topics. I'm happy to go down a rabbit hole, but we're seeing a big hype cycle with media and then they sour and they move on to something else. And I think that happens to any trend.
On the trend front, Jamie, when we first spoke back in October on BTE, we left AI on the cutting room floor just because we ran out of time. And silly us. When I say us, I mean Tess, Andrew, and I, because now that's the only thing anybody wants to talk about. And I know you've been, you know, particularly passionate about artificial intelligence for quite some time now, whether that's related to the opportunities presented by it through the lens of art, through design writ large, through marketing, through media. What are some things that you're particularly focused on right now, and some, just pulling on that word a little bit more, some trends that you've been mining in the last couple of months that you're continuing to monitor and be excited about heading into the new year?
Specifically around AI, I recently spoke at Adobe Max about AI, and there was a really interesting mixture of feelings that came out of my conversations on the side with designers who were in attendance. And it was very much like this fear of what's going to happen, the unknown, of course. Everybody kind of feels that around new technology, like no matter what, in what industry. But there's also this like excitement and optimism about, wow, like maybe I don't have to spend 4 hours like getting these little stray hairs out of this photo, you know, or maybe I don't have to deal with this thing that takes me a really long time and I can actually like do it magically in like, you know, one click and move on to the things that I really like to do. And I honestly think like AI is really great for that. It can really help people be more productive. And so there's one aspect of it that I really like. I feel like the tools, not only in the creative industry, but in all industries, like how can AI make things better for us? Can it fix this spreadsheet problem I have? Can it teach me how to do this like little code thing that I want to do, or help me figure out how to edit this video or whatever it is that I want to do? It's there to help and make us faster or help us learn things more quickly or do things that we don't want to do. And that's the positive side of it. We all know what the negative sides are, so we don't have to get into that. But I do think that it's really interesting to see what it could potentially do for us in science and medicine. It's an area that I just don't think the media talks about with a lot of excitement. But I think Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are actually, they have a foundation or...
His wife's a doctor. So yeah, it's an interesting collaboration.
Yeah, trying to eliminate diseases. I mean, those are the things that are really exciting and optimistic, in my opinion.
I think the cool thing about that, I've mentioned this a couple times when I've been on whatever and asked to do a prediction, is it has the opportunity to turn healthcare to being a predictive thing where you're actually on the front foot and being preventative and understanding like where your gut biome is at, and understanding what rest you need, and understanding what food you need, and what exercise you need, and actually, you know, being able to revolutionize healthcare, not because you're creating a better drug, but because you're avoiding the need for drugs because you're creating a better running person. And the AI is able to personalize that at an individual level. And I think that's really, outside of the industry, of course, just an exciting human opportunity that the tech is really bringing into play.
Hi, Surround listeners. It's me, Amanda Schneider, host of Design Nerds Anonymous. And I've got exciting news to share. Another mini series of DNA is on the way. With the help of my fellow podcaster, Kaylin Reed from the Alternative Design Podcast with Kimball International, we'll be sharing nuanced insights from recent research conducted across four vertical markets: corporate, education, healthcare, and hospitality. Think of this as your prequel to season 6 launching this fall. Our topic is the future of customer decision-making. We're hearing that project decisions around the built environment are taking longer, and we wanted to know why. So we explored with your customers, and we're very excited to share the results with you. Dropping before NeoCon to give you updated data, better tools, and new questions to drive conversation, we're here to facilitate dialogue that helps our industry and beyond streamline that decision-making. So make sure to follow Design Nerds Anonymous, subscribe, and then tune in on May 16th for the first episode in this four-part series. All right, bye for now.
Jamie, you're an artist and using this medium, so I think you can actually speak about this better than anyone. But when you're talking to the design community, where are you seeing them adopt this technology and how are they using it?
Great question. Right now, I'm not really seeing them adopting it at all. I see some designers experimenting with it and sharing that on Instagram, but I don't really see them using it actively yet. But as we all know, I would say the majority of the design industry is slightly behind adopting technology than other industries like fashion, which is really adopting this like crazy. I'm interested to see how it can really help on a more of a business side in design, not necessarily about, you know, creating interiors. Yes, that can be helpful, but I think that there's so much, especially in the commercial side. We've got procurement and inventory and supply chain and a million spreadsheets to keep track of things. And could AI come in and really help maybe even bridge different software programs together?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of exciting things that it can do beyond this visual presentation, which I think a lot of people have gotten caught up in, especially in AI, that's a lot of people are talking about the image generation. But I think on the back end is where we might actually see a bigger change and a more productive change.
It's interesting because when you compare metaverse and AI, like the quote problem with metaverse was it didn't happen immediately. And I think the quote problem with AI for a lot of people is it's happening too fast.
Too fast, yeah.
Yeah. And so what I've been seeing in some of the talks we've given, and we've had the pleasure to talk to some folks in like technology and innovation groups at large firms, they're doing a lot in this space, but it's within somewhat of a black box, right? Like there's so much that's undecided and undetermined that they're not going to, you know, you're a major firm, you've got 1,200 designers. You're not just going to like unleash the hounds until you know exactly what you have and you know how that actually impacts the intellectual property that you're creating, you know, impacts what's going to be developed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to go back to really quick, Jamie, on the AI front, we always want to kind of pull out if there are ways in which we can offer applications to our listeners as it relates to the technologies we talk about. Andrew just was featured on a webinar we hosted focused on AI in the architecture and design industry. And in that webinar, we spoke about ways in which marketers in the architecture and design industry could leverage AI as part of their marketing operations. So I'm curious if there are any tools in particular that you're using across your portfolio, whether it's CEO of Couch or in your work as an artist that you'd recommend folks kind of check out and toy around with.
I think the thing that I use the most for my art practice is Midjourney. And I find that a lot of artists and designers use that. I know before I said designers aren't really big on, the image generation and sharing that, but I have noticed that a lot of product designers that I talk to play around with it a lot. They just don't always share it. They use it to iterate and to ideate. And that's what I do with my art too. So Midjourney is still like my number one go-to, but that's just because I'm focused on the visuals and the visual output. I haven't dabbled too much into the productivity tools yet because being on my couch, I didn't need them. However, I'm currently in the process of researching as many as possible to potentially implement in the future going forward. So I will keep you posted, but nothing has like really jumped out at me as being like a game changer yet. And I think there's just so much stuff in development that we haven't really seen come to fruition. Most of what we've seen so far is, being either something that's extending programs, like for example, Adobe's new generative AI, Firefly is incredible. Those types of tools are fantastic, but we really haven't seen across the board game changers. So I think we have to wait and see what some of the bigger companies are going to roll out over time. For me, I haven't found any that are really just like making such a big difference in my life that I have to shout them out.
It's like an anti-plug.
Yeah, it's an anti-plug. I'm sorry. AI is really an interesting topic.
Bobby's heart shrunk a little bit there, I think.
I'm flustered, but if I'm to go back to something you mentioned, Jamie, on the Midjourney front, one area, just to point it out, that one of the leads in our creative studio had experimented with a little bit, just because you mentioned product design and Midjourney, was leveraging Midjourney to create out of this world print ads for products. So how can we, create an environment where a chair made of, that has an incredible sustainability story is featured in a rainforest environment that just creates, this out of this world feeling. So I'd be interested in, how might organizations start to think about, okay, I might not be able to get a photographer into the Amazon rainforest, but maybe I can create some version of a beautiful ad that kind of transports somebody into this space in a way that I haven't been able to before. So cool applications, cool ways certainly to test out there.
Totally. And I can't remember where I saw it, but there was someone was creating generative backgrounds for product placement. And I think that could be a really great opportunity for anyone who's developing product in any category. But also to bring it back to Adobe, and I am not a paid spokesperson for Adobe, so just FYI, I don't know. I use their software and I was just there. So that's why I'm talking about it a lot. But the generative fill option in Adobe Photoshop is really incredible, where you can just type in what you want it to look like and you can expand it and it just fills in a background for you based on whatever it is you want to be. So you could throw your product in there and say, I want to see my chair in a, Japandi living room or, Scandinavian cabin or something like that. And it generates a background for you. And it's all through Adobe stock photo program. So there's no worry about like stealing other people's art or copyright. It's very transparent. And I like that a lot. I think that's super important and going to become way more important as we go forward.
Yeah, the licensing thing is important for sure. So curious, Jamie, what about today? You kind of hinted before, we've talked to you a few weeks ago that maybe you were up to something new and you're working on something a little different. And I mean, I would love to know exactly what that is.
You're just always looking for the gossip, Tess.
Sure.
I am always looking for the tea. I'm just... I don't have a name. I mean, you did. You've announced this a little bit, but I think just hearing it in your own words, like what are you up to today? What's this new business that you're working with and where are you guys, planning on taking it?
Sure. So I am head of brand or editor-in-chief, however you want to frame it, of a brand called Trom. It's a global gallery that's focused on bringing together digital art with craft and design. So we are working with artists, designers, architects, all creative folks to bring their visions to life through limited edition collections, mostly in the home decor space. So anything from ceramics to fabric to standalone art pieces, rugs, etc. What's really exciting about it too is that it'll have blockchain provenance, so digital provenance. So it's bringing together all of the things that I love. So I'm really excited about it.
Is this something that's just in the US right now, or you said global, or were you shipping around the world? You know, how does that work logistically?
Yeah, so we're based in Paris and the United States. So it's a global company. And the artists that we're working with are also global, and the artisans that we work with as well are global. So what I really love about this is that we're working with a lot of craftspeople. So we're working with craftspeople in Morocco, you know, where that's their economy, are these crafts. And so we're preserving and, you know, these heritage crafts. And that's really important to me. Also craftspeople in Europe. And then we'll also be working with some here in the US. So it's great because it brings together art and design, but we're also doing a lot with physical objects and craftspeople who are making things, which super important to me to preserve craft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had Patty Carpenter on the show, and she spent some time speaking about that as well, and the importance of the origin of the craft, and also, you know, using it to support those communities, especially as we move it over into the Western part of the world.
Yeah, and we're becoming such an increasingly digital world, I guess. And there is worry and concern that, you know, this guy who sews the seams in the leather for these chairs is 85, you know, and like nobody knows how to do it except him. So it's one of those things that like super important to preserve these techniques. And I don't know if you saw this, but Louis Vuitton is building a school that's also kind of like an internship.
Oh, cool.
Where they'll have students, and it'll also be open to the public so that they can preserve the craft of making their products, and also commitment to hiring people who go through the process of, you know, learning these crafts. And I think Bottega Veneta is also doing it. So it's something that the fashion brands are already on top of, making sure that what they're doing, even though they have these digital components, because if you buy Louis Vuitton products, you actually get, I believe a lot of them are on the blockchain as well, which is really interesting. And so they're really making sure that for generations to come, they'll still be able to make the products and make high quality products in addition to whatever they do digitally.
I appreciate you checking the blockchain box on our bingo cards for this episode.
Of course.
Can you talk to just explain for the listeners like a little bit more like about how or why that's important and how that connects to the provenance of these authentically designed goods?
Yes, it's very important because, well, obviously we know how frustrating knockoffs can be. So what's great about the blockchain is it's essentially a ledger, and it says like, you know, when you create an object, it's like, you know, it's like you signing a ledger saying like, I created this thing. And then for every time it changes hands, there's a note that says, oh, it went from this person to this person. So it traces back the ownership of an object to its origin. And that's, of course, very important for, you know, vintage products that you would buy, whether it's design or fashion, et cetera. So I think that that's why a lot of the fashion companies got together, like Prada and Louis Vuitton, to create the Aura blockchain, which is what the fashion houses are using. And so for design objects, you can do that as well. I think you already know that because you worked with Heller, I believe, on something similar, right? Plug for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
We'll take it.
That was really nicely done, by the way.
I was going to say, see, Bobby, see how smooth that was.
And so we're moving into this era where we're able to put chips into things so that they're within the object. So you can't remove the chip from the object, which means you can't, and I'll use a dirty word, NFT, right? This is technically, it's an NFT, but we don't want to talk about that anymore, which is a change that's happened in the past 13 months since we talked previously. NFT seems to be a dirty word in the media. People associate it with the collectibles and scams and things like that. And that's really not where we're going. That's not ever what I you know, was talking about when I talked about NFTs, I was always talking about digital provenance and ownership. Mm-hmm. And that's the important part, I think, to take away from the blockchain.
Yeah, really well said. That entire world, we are recording this on the day after Sam Bankman-Fried was like
guilty.
Pretty much unanimously. The newsletter I read this morning said that it took the jury only 4 hours to deliberate, and that included time away for lunch. So he was exceptionally guilty of those charges. And yeah, it's another real black eye for that sort of area of the previous hype cycles that you were talking about off the top, Jamie.
Right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So what's next with you guys? Like, where are we going to be able to see some of this content and this brand start to come together and roll out?
By the time this airs, we will have had an event in Miami for Art Basel Miami, where we have our next two collections will be unveiled. Those collections will go live shortly thereafter, December, January. And I guess I can talk about it now. We have two artists. We have Jeff Davis, who is an artist who works digitally. I believe he may also do prints. He's a master of color. That's always been his thing. His creative vision is bringing colors to life. So we're actually doing that by bringing it to life in stained glass. So it's really, really beautifully done. And then we're also working with Martin Grasser. He's a San Francisco-based artist who has done a lot in generative work. And his collection that we're releasing is a series of mirrors. And the mirrors come out of Venice. So it's glass mirrors. And they will be generative so that there are different colors and different shapes based on letters of the alphabet and different characters.
Very cool.
So it's pretty fascinating. And exciting, where you see these artists who are working in code and they're working with math and they're working with color. They've done that digitally, but now we're bringing it into the physical world. And these are objects that are not only art, but they're also design, and they're physical. You can touch and feel them, but they're also digital.
It's a colliding of all worlds.
It is. It's exciting.
Yeah, a beautiful thing.
I hope I explained that well. I feel like it's a lot to take in.
No, you did.
And the hardest thing with some of the stuff is just describing it, right? Like, we haven't done it yet today and we won't, but I'll reference it. We've been asking people about the word fidgetal a lot on the pod lately. And it's just like, Jesus. No, but you need
There's to. A bingo card again.
You need these words. We need these
so
words.
So bad.
He's a dog on a bone.
It's your question.
He just won't quit, Bobby.
But so that people can have like a common reference point, right? So it's tough when there isn't that word.
At what point do we not use either one of those, though? Do you think that there will come a point where we're just going to talk about an object and that object is both digital and physical and it doesn't matter?
I love that thought. That's a wonderful world I'd like to live in.
I think we're going to get there. I think a lot of the tech that you've been speaking about, I think in the moments of collectibles and art and design and IP will come forward, and it'll be something, I mean, I could imagine it would be something that would be expected. And then a lot of the times, I think there'll be things that we do in life where the tech is just going to run behind the scenes and, you know, we won't need to know.
One of the ways that I think is really interesting to think about it when it comes to fidgetal is like, we're already in a digital world. We're sharing things digitally with each other. So if I take a picture and I put it on Instagram and I'm wearing an outfit, that outfit is both digital and physical, because to everybody else, it's digital. To me, it's physical. And so we're kind of already living in the fidgetal, but people don't really think of it as fidgetal. And that's where I have a problem with this digital physical like divide, because we are already super digital, and I don't see a difference between like someone's house online being like a you know, beautifully designed and actually being in the space. Yes, it's a different feeling, but to me, they're both the same thing.
When we had Rodolfo Grella on, he had like a really similar kind of take on things. And I love that take, that it's just so fluid that we just need to realize that there is no difference anymore.
Well, we're all on a camera right now, video streaming. So it's like we're already, it's like avatars now. It's just we don't have the, it's not immersive, but it's still a flat, mm-hmm. like moving digital version of you.
Totally.
I'm a little overwhelmed.
Wow. Do we have anything more to plug, Bobby? Is it possible?
I can personally plug the fact that I'm going to be laying in bed wondering if we're just all living in a digital world tonight. I'm thinking about Olivia Newton-John now and the song Physical and how that turns into the song Physical. But rest in peace, Olivia Newton-John. But Jamie, anything else you'd like to plug before we start to head into rap?
So many things. And yet I don't know how to, like, yes and no. I just want to plug that.
Where can people find what you're up to?
Yeah, so obviously you can find me on all the socials and everywhere at Jamie Derringer. It's J-A-I-M-E. And for Traum, you can visit us at traumparis.com or you can find us on Instagram at traumparis. It's T-R-A-M-E Paris.
And Bobby, I think you had one plug for us too about a certain answering machine service that we're setting up for the pod.
Oh, yes.
Oh, dear.
I'm going to steal just 30 seconds of Jamie's plug time. If you want to reach out to the Barriers to Entry podcast with any bold predictions.
You, the listener, we're referring to.
You, the listener. With any bold predictions about 2024, thoughts about the future of trade shows, or you just want to get in touch with Andrew Tess and I, you can email bte@sandowdesign.com. There's also soon going to be a Barriers to Entry hotline. Can you imagine that? So you can phone in, talk to us live on air, maybe not live on air, but leave us a voicemail and we'll integrate you into the show. So bte@sandowdesign.com. Send us your hot takes.
Well plugged. Well plugged.
Thank you.
Are we going to talk about the future of trade shows right now? Because that sounds so much like so much fun.
Oh man.
No, we're trying to get you to be the first contributor.
Yeah, you should check your inbox in about an hour because we have a call to action for you.
Okay.
coming very shortly.
Thanks so much for coming on today and sharing kind of the recap of where we started and where we're at now. And, you know, we asked you this on episode one and you gave the most fantastic answer in terms of resources and advice that you would share with our listeners. You know, feel free to repeat it. But I'm going to ask you again, do you have any advice? Bobby's like, please don't. I was going to say you can still plug your LinkedIn because your LinkedIn is fire. Yes, it's really great follow. But do you have any resources that you'd want to share or advice to share with our listeners? You know, those who've followed us along the way and those that just want to learn more.
Well, I think that maybe this is what I said last time and I can't remember, but being open and curious is something that has always helped me get rid of the fear of anything new. And having hands-on experience also really helps understand things a little bit better. And it'll help you understand how new technology fits into your life, whether it does or does not. So I think, you know, immersing yourself in some of these texts, if you can, yes, or just dabbling in them is fine too. Just, yeah, I'd say like, just keep, oh my gosh, what am I saying? What is it? Stay curious and stay hungry? Is that what the Steve Jobs quote is?
I don't think we're trying to rip off quotes here, Jamie.
I'm just trying to make it easier for me to give advice by just like, oh, well, why don't you just listen to what Steve Jobs said? Because he's really good at that. I'm not great at advice, but I'd say just stay open and curious.
I think that is fantastic advice. To have an open mind, be curious, and give it a try for sure.
Hannah Vitti, our podcast producer, what did you learn today on this episode of Barriers to Entry?
I learned a lot. I also feel like I have some things I want to keep exploring, whether with myself or others. But I think one big takeaway that was quite surprising for me was kind of the relationship between like the media and these trends and kind of the hype cycle, and seeing how that might be crucial to whether things are actually adopted or whether folks are scared. I guess I don't normally interact with all of this on a day-to-day basis. And so in my head, I was like, oh, people are still talking about NFTs. But I guess once you started talking about it, I'm like, I actually haven't seen or heard much about NFTs. So I think exploring that relationship between how crucial public opinion and media is to the adoption of some of these things is huge. And I guess another thing I'm thinking about is kind of like the binary between the digital and the analog, I guess. And as an audio...
Fidgetal. It's fidgetal is the word you're looking for.
Go ahead, say it.
Don't make her say it. Don't make her say it. You don't have to.
No, fidgetal would be actually like not the binary between, right? Fidgetal would be kind of like the landscape in the middle. And as an audio person, I'm often like frustrated between like the hierarchy of visual and audio. I often think that like the world prioritizes video. You know, folks want to make video podcasts now and everything's. And I'm an audio person, but I'm often kind of asking myself to be in the fidgetal and that in-between space. So it's kind of like, What do all these things, by not just viewing them in binary terms, allow for? I think there's so much richness in between when we're not trying to say like one thing is better than the other, right? Like the old fashioned physicality is better than the digital, when to Jamie's point, often we're actually already swimming like in between all the time. So,
yeah.
And the last thing is just that the blockchain can be really like an equitable way to track and eventually support folks who've actually made the thing themselves. So I think those are the things I'm thinking about after today's convo.
Do you think that audio is both digital and physical or neither?
Wow, that's a great question. I think I want to say both, you know? I think I want to say first, because I think you can think about that in so many different ways. Even in the audio community, there's like the age-old debate between like the vinyl records and now like the MP3 wave tracks. So there's like the argument within the argument within the argument. But I think it's both, I'm going to say.
Jamie, you kind of blew my mind when you were talking about how the Zoom call is just like digital. And I was like, oh my God, I'm looking at pixels. I'm not looking at Jamie. I'm looking at like
crazy,
a combination
right?
of like pixels that make you up. And I was like, my brain
exploded.
Yes,
there's a similarity between pixels and atoms, I think. It's very, very totally.
Very deep today on BTE.
I love this.
I just want to say that I learned that you could be exceptionally guilty, not just guilty, according to Andrew Lane. You could be exceptionally guilty in a court of law. So thank you, Andrew.
I don't know if they read it quite that way, but that was the tongue-in-cheek summary I read.
That just means guilty on all counts, I think.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Well, thanks, Jamie, so much for joining us and coming back again today. Thanks, Hannah, for chiming in and making sense of all of our conversations and ramblings for the last 40 or so minutes. And of course, thanks to the rest of the Barriers to Entry production team, our regular producer, Rob Schulte, who Hannah, thanks for pinch hitting in for him today, and all the rest of the team back at the studio by Sandow. As you all hopefully know by now, Barriers to Entry is a part of the Surround Podcast Network. Make sure that you go to surroundpodcast.com. That's podcast with an S. Smash the follow button and come back for more conversations like this one. Thanks again, Jamie, for joining us, and hope that all the rest of you will join us again next time as we continue to break down the barriers to entry. Did you see how Bobby really expertly snuck in that sneaky little Sandow plug there?
I mean, he is a plug master.
It's very on brand, Bobby. Very on brand. Well done.